Lessons from the screen.
So today we're going to continue to lean in on the treasonous insurrection.
Yes, that's what I'm calling it because that's what it was.
We're going to continue to lean in on the treasonous insurrection and the logic that's trying to excuse it. So we are also going to be talking about the idiocy that made it possible, that sanctioned it, the sedition that put it in motion, and all of the things that led up to this that we've been talking about for the past few weeks. But I'm not going to cover tracks that I've already covered. I am going to reinforce some points that I feel like need to be reinforced, but for the most part, I'm going to try to cover a bit of new ground. So this show will be a little bit different from the show we did just yesterday. The Train Podcast went live yesterday with Professor Carl Tone Jones. And last week, you know, I talked about this. We're going to keep talking about it, but we're going to try to do it a little bit different today. I do have more to say, but let's get into the response of the Democrats a little bit, because there's some troubling developments there, in my opinion. And we're also going to talk about some of the Republicans that are breaking rank, namely one Mitch McConnell. Sir. We're going to talk to that guy. We're going to address his soul. And finally, we're going to talk about security during the Biden administration. During the Biden inauguration. That is something that we definitely need to talk about. We definitely need to consider. But before we get into all of that, I want to say welcome to Lessons from the Screen. This is the podcast where we give you a review of whether or not any information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. And as always, you are very well. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PAX Inc. PAX Inc. is a black activist advocacy and think tank organization with the purpose of increasing the quality of life of black people in America through a focus on education, economics, and culture and community development. And so if you want to support them, and you definitely should, they got a lot going on, even in these times of pandemic, you can go on over to www.pactsinc, that's paxinc.org, and leave them a review, leave them a comment, become a member, become a sponsor, tell a friend to tell a friend. You know the deal, you know what it is, you know what it do. Make sure that you support them in every way that you can, because they are supporting you in every way that they can. And so, again, that is www.pactsinc.org, paxinc.org. So we are going to get back into a full breakdown of the Joe Biden plan for Black America. We are going to be releasing part 8 of that. As soon as things calm down from the craziness that's been going on, we should definitely be taking this opportunity to regroup our own communities, but we should definitely be taking this opportunity as well to pay attention to what is happening in our larger American society, because we live here and it affects us. And it's been shown that it will continue to affect us. January 6th actually affected us. There were a number of people all over the country that were attacked on January 6th. People that look like me, people that look like you. So pay attention is all I'm saying. This was the first time something like this has happened in over 200 years. It was a historic happening. And I'm going to keep saying that. It was historic. So the media is trying to rub it off. Everybody's talking about it like it was just another day in the office, and it wasn't, and I'm bothered by that. I've already said that. But one of the things I want to talk about, this argument that I'm seeing presented, some of these people are using arguments that are historically valid, but that don't necessarily make everything okay. But they're trying to use these arguments to make everything okay. And so I want to dive into one of these arguments, because it is a well-thought argument, and I feel like it deserves a well-thought-out answer. People often bring up the argument of Thomas Jefferson, who, in writing a letter to James Madison following the Shay Rebellion of 1787, the rebellion was actually 1786 to 1787, and what the Shay Rebellion was about was, in Massachusetts, there were a lot of former soldiers returning home. The laws were changed and they could no longer get goods on credit or through the barter system, as had been the case traditionally. They were being demanded, they were being told to use cash, and cash was in short supply, as was gold and silver. So they had no means of paying for product, which means that they couldn't farm their land, and they had no means of paying for the land or paying for their homes or anything like that. So the bankers started foreclosing on their homes, and they started getting arrested. So they started going to jail, losing their homes, losing their ability to feed themselves and provide for themselves. And so they rebelled. And it's called Shay's Rebellion after Daniel Shay, who was one of the leaders of that rebellion. And this rebellion was actually one of the driving influences behind the Constitutional Convention that created the Constitution, which moved us from the Articles of the Confederate to the Constitution that we now have. Shay's Rebellion was a big part of that. So Thomas Jefferson was writing a letter to James Madison in 1787. I believe it was in January of 1787. It was prior to the Constitutional Convention. He said that a little rebellion every now and then is a good thing, and as necessary in the political world as storms in the physical world. And so a lot of these people are using that argument from that letter to James Madison in 1787, and they are mixing it, not knowing that they're mixing it, but they're mixing it with another argument from another letter. So after the Constitutional Convention, I believe it was in November of 1787, Thomas Jefferson wrote to William Stevens, and they're taking that letter, this letter, and combining it with the letter that I just mentioned, and then this letter that he wrote to William Stevens. He says, with regards to rumors of America being in anarchy, which was rumors going around the world at that time, he says, and I quote, "Yet where does this anarchy exist? Where did it ever exist? Except in the single instance of Massachusetts. And can history produce an instance of a rebellion so honorably conducted? I say nothing of its motives. They were founded in ignorance, not wickedness." And he goes on to say, "God forbid we should ever be 20 years without such a rebellion. The people cannot be all and always well informed. The part which is wrong will be discontented in proportion to the importance of the facts they misconceive. If they remain quiet under such misconceptions, it is a lethargy, the forerunner of death to the public liberty." And later on in that letter, he says, "What country can preserve its liberties if their rulers are not warned from time to time that their people preserve the spirit of resistance? Let them take arms. The remedy is to set them right as to the facts, pardon and pacify them. And what signify a few lives lost in a century or two?" And he followed that up with the famous quote, "The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is natural manure." Now, these statements and letters are often taken together as logic to excuse the behavior of recent events. And given that it is a well-thought argument, let me respond with a well-thought-out answer. Bullshit. For starters, Shay's Rebellion involved people actually losing their homes, losing their livelihoods, losing their freedom, losing their ability to feed themselves. They felt, right or wrong, like they were being oppressed and had the receipts to show it. You cannot compare that to what just happened. These are people upset. They're upset that their candidate lost the election. That's what they're mad at. After more than 50 federal court cases, more state cases, there was no evidence of the massive voter fraud that they believed occurred, that they had been told occurred. There was no evidence. There was no persecution here. There was no persecution here. Secondly, they weren't just focused on the election. They were harming innocent people all over the nation. They didn't focus their wrath on the government. There were innocent people all over the nation being brutalized and hurt by these mobs of people. There are reports of them, news reports, articles of them asking people, "Who did you vote for before they launched their attacks?" This is out. This is another clear indication that this wasn't about patriotism or government overreach. This was political and racial in nature. So He goes on to say that these people should be given the facts and pacified. The only way to pacify these people would be to install Trump as president for another term and potentially to make him a permanent president, as was done in China. And that is something that both Trump and his followers repeatedly mentioned. They repeatedly talked about this. As to giving them the facts, every opportunity was made to educate these people, but they would not listen because they will only listen to those that have the same view as they turned on the vice president, somebody that they have been championing for the last 4 years. They turned on him like that for not violating his constitutional duties. And if Thomas Jefferson is talking about any rebellion for whatever reason, then I've got a simple answer for that as well. I disagree with him. Let's not confuse the issue. There are facts and figures that back up the grievances that black people have against the government. And a lot of people are even trying to say the Black Lives Matter movement did it. Black people did it. It makes no sense. Why would black people do that? Black people don't want to see Trump reinstalled. Why would we do something that prevents him from leaving office? That makes no sense. Why would Antifa even do that? Antifa is not a friend of Donald Trump. They want this man gone. Black people have receipts for our grievances. We have stats, figures provided from the government and other institutions that we as a collective, as a society, as a country hold in high, great esteem that show that we are facing difficult times in America. We have those receipts. These people have none. They don't have none. A lot of these people are the people that are doing the oppressing and the abusing of other people. And they're upset that their specific rich white guy didn't win. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. Thomas Jefferson ends his first letter by saying that these are his opinions on the matter, meaning just that. These are his opinions. And guess what? I'm entitled to disagree with them. And I do. So these people were not rebelling for any reason related to oppression. These people were engaged in an act of treason. They were engaged in an act of treason because their billionaire leader told them to. Now, we can get into arguments about whether or not he's actually a billionaire. That's not what this is about. To them, he's a billionaire. And he told them to. The very manifestation and representation of the elite system that they claim they hate, they have fallen in love with. He told them to march down Pennsylvania Avenue and he would march with them. And they marched. And he even lied about that because he didn't march with them. He was watching from inside the White House, refusing to send aid to even his Republican members of Congress that supported him and that backed him and everything he's doing and everything he stands for. I don't want to, and I think most of us don't want to live in a society where people can just get mad and overthrow the government for any little reason. And that's assuming they have a little reason. These people don't even have that. They are mad at the legality of something that doesn't go their way. This is the equivalent of a white temper tantrum. And it's a big one. It's I want to say one other thing. It's not the response a bit. Like, every opportunity was made to give these people the facts. They lost court cases. There are news organizations out there. Report after report after report came out. These people, fake news, all of it. They refuse to believe that they were wrong. At some point, it becomes the responsibility of the people themselves to educate themselves. You need to make sure that you can prove your case. And I know a lot of people are on this, well, who are you going to prove your case to? The fact of the matter is, if you want any government to be overthrown and that overthrown, the new government that's set up to replace it, to have any standing in the world, you need to be able to prove your case to other governments, to other nations. Other states have to recognize your legitimacy. All of this talk about sovereignty and everything else. If nobody else recognizes your sovereignty is not real. That's the truth of it. That's what it is. You know, you can argue with me, but you can't argue with the truth. The truth is, if no other country recognized the United States as being a separate, if Morocco didn't take that first step of being the first nation to recognize the United States as a legitimate nation, and if other nations didn't follow suit, the United States would have had no standing to proclaim itself an independent nation from the British Empire. Other nations would have rallied behind Britain, and we very well might still be a part of the British Empire. That's the facts of it. Other nations have to stand behind your claim to sovereignty. That's the whole beef right now with what's happening in Taiwan, trying to claim their sovereignty from China. People not wanting to recognize that claim of sovereignty because they don't want to piss off China. Seeing something similar happening in Hong Kong where they're begging people to recognize their sovereignty from China, their independence from China, even going so far as to say, no, we're still a part of the British Empire. We're still a British territory. We're not a part of China. Other people have to recognize your sovereignty. We're seeing it all over the world. So, by this point, we've seen the footage. And we talked about all of the evidence yesterday that supports the idea that this was in fact a terrorist or a inside job. They had inside help. There were people inside of the government, on the security staff, the congressional staff, and everywhere else that supported what these people were doing. That is not conspiracy. That's fact. There's been numerous articles pop up over the last few days that supported that. The FBI is even going, like we said yesterday, going so far as to investigate all 25,000 members of the National Guard supposedly in place to protect the Joe Biden inauguration. They're doing that because they found that a number of the security personnel at the Capitol had ties and were sympathetic to the cause of the protesters and chose that cause over doing their job. It is what it is. We talked about yesterday how this was a psychological message as well sent out to white supremacists. It was a psychological message as well sent out to black people, and we got the message loud and clear. We got that message loud and clear. What's been interesting is that Mitch McConnell is now singing a different tune. And it's been interesting listening to a lot of the Republicans, but Mitch McConnell specifically, it's been interesting listening to him sing a different tune and trying to downplay what happened. Just earlier today, he spoke on the treasonists, and he said they were violent criminals and that they were provoked by lies from the president and others. He then went on to congratulate the Senate for doing the job anyways, the confirmation of Joe Biden, and in the face of violence and threats. And he promised the inauguration would be safe and spoke about reaching across the aisle and being bipartisan. Whatever, Mitch. Now we're all Americans, Mitch. Now we all love this country, Mitch. Now we're all in this together, Mitch. Mitch. You, Mitch, you. Sit your Mitch ass down somewhere. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Shut up. For the better part of the last 20 years, you have been creating the environment that led to the extreme polarization of the American political process, the American political establishment that allowed for a Donald Trump presidency, and that allowed for the events that we just saw on January 6th. You were at the forefront of that, Mitch. You ask me, you're just as much as a traitor as the rest of them. Now, while you didn't go so far as some of your other colleagues to commit sedition, you have still been an enemy of the American political establishment for years, and you have not been doing your job as an elected official either. Proof of that is in all of the judges that Trump got the opportunity to fill following up the Obama administration. We don't need to look any further than that. to see perfectly legitimate examples of you not doing your job and not fulfilling your constitutional duties. So while you may not be a seditionist, you still should be expelled from office. This is not about politics. This is about doing your damn job. Barack Obama's Supreme Court nominee didn't even get a hearing because of you, Mitch. I don't want to hear about being bipartisan and reaching across the aisles after what you've done throughout your political career. So, and again, this is not about whether I agree with your political views or not. This is about doing your damn job. You had no right to hold up those judge confirmations. You had no right to sit on bills that the American people said repeatedly that they wanted at least taken up and talked about them. If you have a confirmation hearing for a judge and they don't go through, fine. We can argue about the process all we like, but the fact of the matter is there was a confirmation. There was a hearing. If the bills that people want to go through die on the floor or don't make it through debate, fine. But they need to at least come to debate, especially if the American people are saying that they want these bills to be discussed and to be considered. You don't have the right to sit them on your desk and just hold them there. And no political figure does. Mitch, I tell you what, these people, and let's be clear about this, Mitch, you don't have the power to even promise that the Biden inauguration will be safe. QAnon people, they have said that there will not be a Biden presidency. Now, I don't believe them. I think there will be a Biden presidency. But what I do believe is that somebody's planning something and somebody's going to try to do something. Which takes me to another issue, which is the fact that they're moving ahead with this inauguration anyways. The fact that they're processing this inauguration as if nothing's going to happen is problematic for me. They should proceed with an extraordinary inauguration, make it quick to the point, but I talked about that yesterday. But Joe Biden and the Democrats are now talking about creating a section of U.S. law focused on domestic terrorism, of which there currently is not a section in American law focused on domestic terrorism. And I do want to talk about this again in almost verbatim phrasing that was used yesterday. There is no need for such a law. Such a law poses a threat to all black people that want to better their community. When they organized as a mob of people and decided to use force to stop the execution of public law, they were committing treason under the levying war guidelines of the U.S. Constitution. They are treasonous. They're treasoners. They're treasonaries. Whatever the word is, that's what they are. So, there's no need for this law. There's no need for this law. Now, if the statements are true, there are also plans to send American intel to foreign nations, which is the other guideline of the treason law, aiding and abetting an enemy power. The other guideline is that there would be at least two or more witnesses, and like I said yesterday, there were 200 million witnesses. We saw it on TV. We can look at the videos right now on YouTube. I don't care what anybody says. Stupidity cannot be reasonable justification and excuse for committing treason, for attempting to overthrow the government, for attempting a coup. Stupidity is not a justifiable excuse for that. It's not. And it can't be. And it shouldn't ever be. And I don't care who says it. You could bring me a document written by George Washington with the blood from his syphilis scab. And I will still say, I don't care. Stupidity and idiocy cannot be legitimate excuses for pardoning someone for committing treason or for trying to overthrow the government. With the black identity extremists, the BIA report the FBI put out not too long ago, I'm very concerned with the domestic terrorism section of law being layered on top of that. And we did a show on black identity extremists, I think a year or two ago. check that out if you're interested in that. It was an hour-long show. We went through the whole document, so check that out. One of the reasons I've been pushing for these people to be tried for treason is not that the harm, the punishment for treason is especially harsh, because it's not. The minimum sentence they can get is 5 years. The minimum fine is $10,000. And most of them will probably get the minimum. Now, at most, they can get put to death, but it's not that. It's the fact that when you're convicted of treason, you can't hold public office, meaning that these people will not be able to run for public office. I don't have to go into the significance of how important that would be for black people to not have these particular people who are this silly, this idiotic, this stupid, and this willing to go through these kinds of extremes of foolishness in office. We already got enough issues with the foolish people that are already in office. We don't need this level of extreme foolishness in office. It's just what it is, people.
I don't think that will happen.
And I do think we got to keep in mind, like, the rise in the establishment of the Tea Party became firmly entrenched when a lot of those people were put in office. And now that's a part of the Republican Party. And that part of the Republican Party has largely become Trump loyalists. So you see how that level of extreme has turned into another level of extreme. One of the things I will say is this. I also wouldn't be surprised if Trump pardons these people in the wee hours of tonight, you know. And I wouldn't be surprised if Biden pardons these people as he's coming into office. It definitely wouldn't surprise me at all. Is it something that I think we should all be upset about if it happens? Of course. But it wouldn't surprise me if that occurred, and I think that would be just another message sent. Just like it won't surprise me if a good chunk of these people go off scot-free with no punishments whatsoever. Would it be something that we should be upset about? Sure. But it shouldn't surprise any of us. I want to thank you guys for tuning in, and I want you to tell me what you think. Do you think that I'm making more of a deal out of this than it was? Do you think they went too far? What do you think about this entire situation, and what do you think the outcome should be for them, and what do you think black people should do about it? Let me know. We talked about that, like I said, yesterday, so I didn't really get into that today. But let me know what you think. And I will see you next time. Make sure that you hit the like button, you hit the subscribe button, you tell a friend to tell a friend, you leave a comment. Make sure that you will do all of that. And I will see you next time on the next episode of Lessons from the Screen.